Blog Talk Radio.
The Clown Time Sports Blog coming at you with the Clown Hour tonight. You can find my sports blog on the web. It's the Clown Times with a K, by the way. Clown with a K, by the way, I should say. And the web address is www.theclowntimes.net. And you can do a search on Facebook for our sports blog. Just do a search for the Clown Times, and you'll be able to find us there. We have a special treat tonight. Supposed to be talking about Steelers football with Neil Coulong. I hope I got his last name right, from SB Nation's Behind the Steel Curtain. For those of you who are not familiar with SB Nation, SB Nation is one of the premier sports blogs in the country. Basically, you know, all professional teams, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, hockey, they each have a page on sports, on SB Nation, I should say, that's devoted to that particular franchise, the team. And a lot of college teams have the same. Well, mainly college football and college basketball teams have pages as well. So I'm going to keep the party going, I'll be joined by Neil Coulong momentarily. But basically, to kick things off before it comes on, basically we're going to be talking about the 2013 Pittsburgh Steelers season, why it's been in shambles. They're still technically on the fringe of the playoff hunt. It seems that they are pretty much on life support. The playoffs are pretty much on life support because, you know, losing to Baltimore on Thanksgiving night by 2 points, 22-20, where in a game in which Baltimore thoroughly outplayed Pittsburgh, that win, well, I should say that loss by Pittsburgh pretty much all but eliminated them. And I said last week that this game or that particular game would serve as a elimination game for them. But at any rate, it is what it is right now. Mike Tomlin's quote-unquote Tomlin shuffle, hashtag Tomlin shuffle aside, I will say this about the Tomlin shuffle. It's a good thing that Baltimore did win. I hate to have seen the post-handshake between Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh of the Ravens. I think things would have been a little tense, but thankfully, for Tomlin's sake and the sake of the league, that John Harbaugh was pretty cool about it. No reason to be pissed off. After all, his team did win. But at any rate, I pretty much think that this year's team, while they've given a valiant effort the past, I say 6 weeks, because they're 5-7 now. And that's a hell of an accomplishment considering the fact that they started off 0-4. So if you're a glass half full type of person, you would note that Pittsburgh has won 5 of his last 8 games, which, again, it's not bad. It's actually pretty damn good, except for the fact that they started out 0-4. So where does this leave them? Well, like I said, they are on the fringes of the playoff hunt. They're on the outside looking in. I think Baltimore has the last spot at 6-6. They got that in lieu of the fact that they beat Miami, which is also 6-6. on the season thus far. And the next few weeks around the league in general, especially the AFC, will serve as – oh, well, anyway, without further ado, here's Neil Coulomb of SB Nation. So, Neil, welcome to the cloud, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing fine. First of all, thank you very much for joining us. You probably – you saved the podcast from a rambling from yours truly. So God bless you for that. Well, first of all, before we go into dissect what's going on with the 2013 Pittsburgh Steelers, I noticed on Twitter that you, in addition to being the managing editor of SB Nation behind the steel curtain, you are also a hater of Phil Collins.
I am. I am indeed.
Yes. So where does that hatred come from? And I think I may end up being entertained by this, but go ahead.
You know, I'm not exactly sure, but it's probably more a culmination of several years of torture having to listen to him. You know, to be honest, I had a job after my freshman year of college. A buddy of mine's parents owned a business, and they had a factory in downtown Minneapolis. And we worked there for the summer, and there was a probably 45, 50 people or so in this one gigantic room, and there was assembly and there was shipping. And basically there was one radio in the place. They didn't allow more than one, and they could only listen to one station. And somehow or other, gotcha. It came to be that one station was the Light Rock station. You heard Phil Collins every 32 minutes, I swear to God, and it was torture. I hated that job. It was just awful. I guess I hadn't really thought of that. Maybe that's the genesis of it, pun intended.
There you go. So it's something that you that's not to feel like a needed, or it's pretty much like, screw it. It's fun just hating the guy anyway.
Yep, that's probably it. It's more attention grabbing than that.
There you go. Well, you know what? As a guy who pretty much feels the same way about Michael Bolton, I feel your pain. So. It's all good, bro. It's all good. Trust me.
It's funny you bring that up. Michael Bolton is doing what, like Honda ads now?
I know.
Why would they sign him to do that? Have you ever wondered that?
Dude, I don't know, but it's a mountain to have to climb every five freaking minutes. I mean, because seeing his ass on top of a damn car going, like, dude, shut the fuck up. I mean, I just want to just scream that out loud at him.
There's a cult classic movie, Office Space, and a large chunk of that is dedicated to making fun of Michael Bolton. What's their market?
That was so awesome.
You know, it's people that have seen Office Space. Why would they put Michael Bolton on it? That's an absolute disaster. I can't believe that. Never mind. I'm getting way off the point here.
No. That's okay. I just know not to buy another Honda in my life. So. thank you, Honda, for not buying your car. There you go.
I really hope it is Honda. It might not even be Honda. I might be wrong. I didn't pay attention to it. I was just laughing too hard at the fact that they signed Michael Bolton
scream.
To advertising for him.
I'm just going to scream, just dude, make it stop. Next time I see him, I swear to God, I'm going to scream, make it stop. Wake up the whole neighborhood. before I get to the press with Michael Bolton. Tell everybody, if you don't mind, what got you started being the managing editor of SB Nation, pretty much like start from the bottom, now we're here type of thing.
Oh, boy. Long, very boring story. I'll try to keep it short as possible. I'm a journalism major. I went through college basically writing, not going to class, going to the bar and going to sporting events and writing about them. It was a pretty nice way to go through college. I don't know if it was the most, effective thing I could have done, but it ended up doing that. I got a job as a sports editor with the daily paper out of college, and to be honest, I just kind of burned out on it. It's a tough life. Sports writing, in many ways, it's far more glamorous than anything it could even possibly be, and most people think of, Dan Patrick or Jim Rome or somebody like that when they think of a sports journalist. It's the exact opposite of that. Very, very low pay, horrible hours, and where I started was blunt in the middle of nowhere. So after about 2 years of that, I got sick of it. I moved back home and was looking around for other jobs and got into a different career. It didn't really involve writing, and I hadn't really done anything like that before. So I kind of still had the itch to write, but I really enjoyed the fact that I got paid three times as much to do maybe 10% of the work, and I had my nights free to do whatever I wanted to do. So after a bit, though, I just kind of wanted to get back into writing. So I wrote for a couple different Steelers websites. And eventually started, well, not really started, I joined a network that's no longer operational. But through that, I ended up coming in contact with the founder of Behind the Steel Curtain, a guy named Michael Bean, who worked for the SB Nation network. And I wrote for him just a couple times a week. It was more of a hobby, and I guess in many ways it kind of still is. And I enjoyed doing it. And after a while, Bean got a promotion within the parent network, and they asked me to take over Behind the Steel Curtain. I've been doing that, unofficially since probably midway through the 2011 season, and officially right about January of 2012, I think it was, somewhere in there. So I haven't been at it for too incredibly long, but it's been a wild ride. You know, I you know, even when I was doing this stuff, quote-unquote, professionally, I didn't think I'd get the exposure that I have now through the websites, and I have, you know, a lot of people to thank for that, particularly within SB Nation. A great network. They put out a lot of great work. If anybody's interested in, you know, the national scene, SBNation.com does a lot of that stuff, and along with that, they own team blogs for every sport and a bunch of colleges, soccer teams as well. So it's a very rich tapestry, everything that they cover. It's a great network run by great people, and I'm very fortunate to be a part of it.
Well, that's awesome, dude. That's awesome. Give us, like, shows and slackers like myself a little bit of hope. I mean, basically, I'll share my quick little story. I'm a database manager by day. But when I come home at night and strip off the board and I sleep and pull like a good old fabulous cape, I become a sports blogger. And I've been doing that as a hobby for the past four years, going on five. And it's a cool hobby, but, you know, obviously I aspire to be like one of you guys one of these days. So it's good talking to you, and it's good knowing your story.
I just think it's so funny to hear somebody say that in that sense, but I'll tell you from direct, keep doing what you're doing. Good things happen from it. And I'm testament to that. I've been doing this kind of stuff for 7-8 years now. I mean, I haven't even really thought of it. The mentality really is it's a hobby. You enjoy it. You put the effort into it, as something that you're passionate about. It gets noticed one way or another. You know, keep looking, keep working, and good things work out.
Of course.
For you.
It's always about the grind, man. It's always about the grind. I'm going to tell you a quick story about how I became a Steelers fan. Like, I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, but I grew up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, if you can imagine that. And the thing is that this way before the Panthers came along. I'm like 40 years old, just to date myself here. And so all you see on television used to be Redskins games and sometimes Cowboys games. God bless me. And so basically, I remember, though, by chance, one day I was watching football with my dad, probably about 8 years old, in the early 80s, and I saw a team in black just beat the dog piss out of somebody. I forget who it was. It had been Cleveland, which is probably where my hatred of Cleveland got started, right? And so I was like, Dad, I love this team. It's about, you know, something about a team in black, and that was back, I think it was the second or last year of Jack Lambert's career. And so I remember seeing a blonde-haired dude with two teeth in his mouth just smack the hell out of some ball carrier. And so I fell in love with it. And so it's funny that the second game of the doubleheader was the Cowboys game, and like my dad's a big Redskins fan. So they were playing the Redskins in Texas Stadium. And I remember seeing my dad. Now, my dad doesn't cuss, but I remember hearing some words underneath his breath when Danny White led the team down the field several times to score. And and so I was like, a combination of that and the combination of, you know, back when little boys didn't like girls, I saw like the cheerleaders on the sidelines that they were too flamboyant. I was like, Daddy, I don't like that team. So basically what I'm trying to say is That's how I started loving the Steelers and hating the Cowboys on the same day, 1982. So
it's amazing how it is so night and day between those two franchises, too. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people that have very similar stories of that. You know, it's a cultural thing with the franchise.
Right.
I mean, in my opinion, and people will call me biased. The reality is, I'm part of the Pittsburgh diaspora. I lived out there as a very young child. excuse me, the formative years of my life. I grew up in Minnesota. My father got transferred around for work a bunch, but all my roots are in Pittsburgh, and I just kind of grew up with it. I knew this was the team, this was the family, this was the identity, and I wasn't old enough to really appreciate what that meant. But you know, when I think of myself getting emotional about games, freaking out about games, everything like that, I probably learned that from my dad. You know, in the few moments you've got a few years on me, not a whole lot though, but the few times in Minnesota that the Steelers were on national TV, it was a huge thing in my house, just because you didn't get to see them nationally
right.
that much. You know, I followed them through the newspapers. You know, it was like mythical. These weren't great Steelers teams either. This was Merrill Hodge. This was Louis Lips. You know,
right.
It wasn't the Steel Curtain, but those are the guys that you heard about. So every time I was allowed to stay up to watch Monday Night Football and the Steelers were on, it was like you see the helmets shining in the lights and you think like, oh my God, this is really that team. You know, I've been hearing about so long. It really just takes on kind
right.
of a new aura. And then you see the Cowboys, it's like, what? What is this? All shiny and white and stars. And that's not the team that I want to root for. And I never did. I always wanted that. You know, I was absolutely in love with Chad Brown, Greg Lloyd, Kevin Green, LaVon Kirkland.
God.
Absolutely loved Carnell Lake,
yeah.
Rod Woodson. I mean, that team, all of those guys. I mean, it's you know, gives me chills now just thinking about it, because that was my hero phase. You know, those guys
right.
were everything. And the team always had that mentality. You know, they always had that presence about them. And I don't think that's changed from generation to generation.
And you know what's funny is I now to tell you this one last thing before I get into the bad news after 2013 Steelers season. I remember going there twice. I've been to Pittsburgh twice in the past 10 years. One was for business, another one was going up there with a buddy of mine to see a preseason game, because the regular season games, obviously, you know, they're like year-long ticket lists, like season ticket lists, and plus it's very hard to get a single game ticket, as you probably already know. But that was the last year of Three River Stadium, actually. That was in I want to say
2000.
Out here. Yeah, 2000, right. So basically – Yeah, exactly. I mean, and going to visiting Pittsburgh those two times, I mean, it's like, and I don't want to denigrate the Penguins, because they're a great franchise in and of itself, and that was before the Pirates had this resurgence, obviously. That was in the second years. That's a straight-up Steeler town. I mean, everything is black and gold, the bridges, and, you know, and the dam. I mean, you see Steeler stuff just dominate the hell out of the city. I mean, it was just so awesome to see. I never seen a major city be so football oriented like that. Just so, which the culture, the heartbeat of the city is based on the Steelers. Is that if the Steelers lose, the whole team, the whole city becomes depressed. I mean, it's just really something else to see. It's something to behold.
You know, I don't think people fully understand that, or at the very least, you know, it's also the same kind of thing that makes the Pittsburgh Steelers one of the least liked teams, as well as
sure.
one of the most popular teams in the league.
Right.
Their fans are you know, we're insufferable. We're arrogant. We're cocky. We think we're better than everybody
yeah.
else. Like, yeah, well, you know, there's not a thing that you could tell me that we don't hear. On the website,
yeah.
I know that we'll do you know, some interactive things with the opposing team's blog, and a lot of the times you'll get comments from, you know, diehard fans of whatever team it is. You'll hear
mm-hmm.
the same, you know, comments over and over again. I hate Steelers fans. Everywhere you go, there's always Steelers fans. My reaction's always the same. It's like, yep, you know, we're everywhere, and you can't tell us anything we haven't heard. You know, if that's what makes me cocky and arrogant, then fine. You know, it's life for us. And you aren't a part of it, if you aren't there for that, you don't get it. You want to get it. You want to feel that your cheerleaders and all the fancy, you know, marketing stuff that you'll do give you the kind of tradition that this franchise has. Franchise is the city. You know, the fan base has split. It's spread out over the years, largely due to, you know, economic shifts within the city. I mean, the steel industry closed down. A lot of workers went off other places. That's why when you go to Texas, to New York City, to Washington, D.C., you see so many Steelers fans there. It's because the generation of the Steel Curtain, they've moved. You know, that's my parents. Right. They had me somewhere else. You know, I'm not from Pittsburgh, but I'm from Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh is the largest city in the world. If you talk about people that have claims to it, everybody moved. I mean, the entire, you know, population of the city, it dropped in half or something over a span of 20 years. And it's, you know, been rebuilding itself. But the one thing that's tied it all together has been Steelers football. You know, and that's always going to be the case. The stories that they have will always live on in that same, you know, mythical lore about the 70s, the Steel Curtain teams, when they had the dynasty of all dynasties, you know, in many ways, the greatest dynasty that you know, professional football has ever seen, and one of the best that professional sports has ever seen. So there's a cultural attachment to that team based on the city itself.
And take that, Patriots fans. That the Steelers of the 70s were the best dynasty, not the Spygate, Belichick years of the 2000s. Get the hell out of here with that bullshit. But at any rate, I had to just let that go. I had to let it go. Sorry about that. Okay, I can take a deep breath now. Okay, my friend, the 2013, our beloved 2013 Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, so many things have gone wrong so far this season. I mean, I could point out a leaky offensive line. I mean, hell, to the point that you and I could average double-digit sacks going up against that offensive line. Defense being old. And, frankly, an offensive coaching staff, namely Todd Haley, that's been the bane of my personal existence over the past couple of years, to be frank with you. But You're a lot closer to it than I am. So you tell me what's going on. What's your assessment of the 2013 Pittsburgh Steelers now that we're on the outside looking in, sides of the playoffs?
I think the loss to the Baltimore Ravens in Week 13 is really the difference between the 2012 version of this team and the 2013 version of it. I say that because The 2012 Steelers won four in a row at midseason. They looked good doing it. They really got on a streak. They really got into rhythm. And then that fourth game that they ended up winning, they suffer a major injury. Ben Roethlisberger goes down early in the third quarter against Kansas City, a really good, terrible team, if that makes any sense. Right. Great defense on that team.
Yeah, I've been watching the game,
You see it this year. It's not a whole lot different than it was last year. All credit in the world to Andy Reid, but there are a lot of really good players on that team. The Steelers pull out an overtime win in that game. They lose a close game to the Ravens on Thanksgiving. I'm sure we'll get into Mike Tomlin's sideline theatrics in a bit, but for the sake of the game itself, the Steelers drop that game. Last year, they beat a bad team. This year, they lost to a very mediocre Ravens team in Baltimore. Not the easiest place in the world to play. Not the easiest place in the world to win. What's the difference between the two teams right now? A bad start, and you've got a healthy Roethlisberger over the last four games of that season. Let's transpose the two. And I'm just putting this out there just because I can sense the negativity that you're giving out about the end of the season. You got four games left. All four of these games are very winnable.
True.
You've got a healthy Ben Roethlisberger, and you have a passing game that quietly has become one of the best in the NFL. I know that seems crazy. Look at their production. Look at their stats. The biggest issue I think that this offense has had all the Haley, or the Haley love and hate aside, what you have is an offense that has struggled and probably will continue to struggle due to, you know, it probably more than anything else, a lack of talent. But you have something that's emerging right now. You have Antonio Brown, so, without question, a Pro Bowl level, if not all pro level receiver. You've got a quarterback who, when he's able to throw, when he's getting rid of the ball, throwing the ball down the field, he's got the fifth or the sixth most yards thrown in the NFL. He's not turning the ball over nearly as much as he was at the beginning of the season. He's playing at a very high level of football.
Right.
Those are winning combinations in the NFL today. Now, right or wrong, just to complete the full circle, this is absolutely nothing like the Steel Curtain Steelers, but neither is the NFL. This is a completions league. This is about offenses moving the ball down the field and scoring points, not just racking up yards. That was an issue. Last week in Baltimore against one of the best red zone defenses in the NFL, they scored three touchdowns. In reality, they probably scored five. Le'Veon Bell didn't score on a technicality. Emmanuel Sanders dropped a two-point conversion, which is basically the same thing as a touchdown as far as the attempt itself goes. They put the ball in the end zone five times against a very good Ravens team. My question is, how is it that the Miami Dolphins, the Cincinnati Bengals in Pittsburgh in primetime, the Green Bay Packers without Aaron Rodgers, and anything to do with the Cleveland Browns are not beatable right now?
That's a good point. That's looking at the glass not only half full but more realistically. I do appreciate that. I'm just a natural born pessimist. I guess that's my problem.
There's plenty to be pessimistic about. I could argue 10 times as strongly about how they'll go on four, but at the same time, it's not over, and that's not because the Steelers are a great team or the AFC is a great team. It's because the AFC is flat out mediocre. You know, as happy as Baltimore is for that win, as they should be, they didn't play a good game. Terrible football. That was Thursday night football, something that the league flat out shouldn't have. It shouldn't be allowed. They do it because they want to make money. Everyone wants to talk about the drama of the game being something. The reality is, if you watch that game objectively, it's terrible football. It really is. Either team could have won that game. Baltimore and Pittsburgh should never again play a short week football game. And if they do, that's the league's, you know, shame. They shouldn't do that. Too good of teams, too good of rivalry, too good of franchises on both sides. They should not be playing in a short week. That's garbage. Overall, you're not seeing a Bengals team that's completely unbeatable. I don't see a high level of play from Andy Dalton to suggest this team can, you know, just steamroll anybody they played. They threw the ball to A.J. Green 20 times in a game last week, and they scored, 6 points on offense? They had a pick six and a touchdown that ended up being the difference in that game. They threw at the quote-unquote elite receiver that they have 20 times. And he did so much that he scored 6 points in that. They managed to score 6 offensive points in that game. Not a great team. I don't see how they're any better this year than they were last year. And they're down Geno Atkins. The Browns, I think, are better than what we saw in the whipping the other night. But what you see in Green Bay is the fallacy of what today's NFL is. Everything is built around the quarterback. What happens when your quarterback goes down? You know what the NFL does? They start talking about needing further penalties against defensive players for hitting quarterbacks. Why? Because Aaron Rodgers is hurt and the Packers can't win without him. That's the NFL today. And that's really unfortunate. And until all that goes down, though, the Steelers can go to Green Bay and beat the hell out of that team. They're absolutely one-dimensional. They have a defense that Dom Capers should be, you know, ashamed to be coaching. It's not the level that we've seen from him throughout his career. They have winnable games in front of them. I'm not saying they're going to, but, you know, they are still largely in control of what they want to do. If they go 3-1 and win all three of those AFC games, they're in the playoffs, assuming Baltimore loses. And Baltimore's going to lose one of these games, I guarantee you that.
Well, you know,
it's all up in the air.
Going
it's
going to
be interesting.
They're going to lose
to Detroit, too.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was talking over you.
No, I was agreeing with you. I think they'll lose New England.
Oh, okay.
I think they'll lose to Detroit as well. That's not a great team. They're a one person team right now. I know how weird this is to say, but it's Joe Flacco. Do you realize Joe Flacco didn't turn the ball over once in two games against Pittsburgh this year?
I know.
Not one time. Is that the sign of the apocalypse or what? I don't know what that is all about. But this was the Steelers' defense that had been they caused several turnovers three or four games before they played Baltimore, and they couldn't get to him.
Right.
Did get great pressure on him. He didn't make a whole lot of mistakes. He's a good quarterback. And to be honest with you, the saving grace for them being a 4-12 team this season is Joe Flacco. Is Joe Flacco going to finish what he started, though? Do you really have faith that he can go out and lead this team offensively? I don't think he's that good.
I don't think he can.
He can't carry the team.
I don't think he can.
You know, not over
right.
four games like this with what he has around him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I mean, I don't want to turn this to a Ravens podcast, but I will say this. Once they got rid of Anquan Boldin for, like, what amounted to pennies in the offseason, I'm like, oh, shit, there goes the identity. I mean, it's the Joe Flacco show, and he hasn't really shown that he's capable of carrying the show. But one thing that gives me pause about the Steelers, and granted, you're correct, the last four games are very winnable. I harken back to week four when they were in England, when they were in London, when they played against Matt Castle, and they made Matt Castle look like the second coming of Joe Montana, just they ran up 34 points on us. And granted, we had a chance to tie it at the end before Big Ben got that sack fumble when they were like a stone's throw of the end zone. But I think about stuff like that. I mean, the loss to the Raiders, which I still wonder how in the hell did we lose to the Raiders? And, you know, I mean, that's what's giving me pause. That's what's giving me pause. Again, I'm the eternal pessimistic here. But, I mean, you make a good point. The last four games are winnable. I just think back to – I just have, like, nightmares of the Minnesota game. And just wondering,
you're absolutely not wrong for saying any of that. That's really the thing. The Minnesota game happened. The Oakland game happened. You know, you can't deny that at all. Those are also winnable games. Now, to the Vikings' credit, when you have a guy like Adrian Peterson who rushes for 160 yards, I think it was in that game, but 85 of it, and I have more than that even, it was like 125 of that on two carries.
Yes.
Set up two touchdowns that they had. The Steelers turned the ball over. A bad interception by Roethlisberger. Castle makes a nice throw across the middle to Cortez Allen, who I'm fairly certain he didn't clear customs, and they just threw somebody else in 28 jersey out there for that game. He was horrible in that game.
Yeah.
I don't know what his deal was, but that was a winnable game. But you have to give credit to Vikings. They had big plays. The Steelers did not until the end. And the Minnesota Vikings did not have, I forget his number, Mike Adams at left tackle.
Right.
They didn't have a player who was that inferior to his competition playing. Football is a game of matchups. You know, it's a team game, but you're talking about 11 individual matchups. When you have one guy who gets beaten that badly on all of his one-on-ones, you're not going to have a very good team. That's really what you saw in that game, and that's why Mike Adams hasn't started another one at left tackle since then. And knock on wood, it doesn't happen this weekend, although it looks like that might be the case. The Oakland game, you look at their stats, they had 93 rushing yards on one carry, the first play of the game, and then 195 total on like 35 other carries. Oakland did not dominate that football game. They knocked Pittsburgh in the mouth early, knocked them back, and then lost the next three quarters of that game. The Steelers could not do enough offensively after the defense gave up the big play. That's what cost them that game. In many ways, you also had two drops. I mean, Antonio Brown dropped a touchdown and a first down in that game. Not a good game. Again, not at all saying that the Steelers are all of a sudden, you know, Super Bowl contenders. The version of that team is still out there. The point, though, top to bottom is – those games were close. They were competitive. They were different teams that they played against at those at those respective points of the season, they're a different team now as well. Now, the worst part is the argument that I'm making sounds a lot better if Fernando Velasco is still, you know, snapping the ball to Ben Roethlisberger and you don't have to worry about Kelvin Beachum and David DeCastro playing on Sunday. That's the bigger problem here, and that's a big part of the reason why I compare this team to last year's team minus one game, that game against the Ravens. It's no different, except you have Roethlisberger now under center. You don't have a four-game winning streak. You've got a three-game winning streak and a short week game on the road for the second year in a row, I might add, which is complete and total bullshit. They'll get to that with the league in the offseason, I'm sure. Top to bottom, though, it's a team that's coming into its own during a certain stretch of the season, and now they're going to find out if they can overcome the adversity and the injuries that they've had. And I can't honestly say that it's impossible. It's going to be hard, but I can't say that it's impossible for them to win 3 of 4 here and take the last seed in the AFC. I really can't.
Yeah. And so, I mean, to your point, I mean, the AFC outside of Denver and to a certain extent New England, so much garbage. I mean, I don't want to call it garbage, but it's mediocre. I mean, the last playoff spot is held by the Ravens at 6-6. And, you know, I mean, there's like a glut of teams within a stone's throw of taking over the last playoff spot. I mean, it's not a great conference. It's not a great conference. It's like a quagmire, you know, outside of Denver and I guess New England. I do have hope. For that reason, I do have hope. I do have hope. It starts this weekend against Miami. Get this game underneath their belt, and then from there, Cincinnati at home, at Green Bay, fans, Aaron Rodgers more likely, and at home against a bad Cleveland team. I like our chances. It's just that you kind of wonder that 0-4 hole will doom them in the end. You kind of wonder that, and I just wish that they had use the no-huddle offense a hell of a lot more like they're doing now. Maybe, I don't know, maybe would have been made a difference in the first four games of the season.
I think maybe mistakes with that could have been made. I don't think, though, the inclusion of it is really, you know, the pivotal moment of this team over the last, you know, how many 28 games or whatever that Todd Haley has been the offensive coordinator. They really broke it out and really used it to a high degree against a Detroit Lions team that has a great front seven and a terrible secondary. Anytime they can get that team in their base, they're going to feel, especially if they have 11 personnel on the field, those three receivers going against that secondary, that's a big advantage for them. It was a strategic move to use it against the Lions. It works against the Lions. It's probably not going to work as well, and it didn't against Cleveland the following week. Their defense bailed them out in large order in that game against a very good Browns defense. That's a good competitive defensive football team. We know Ray Orton well, and he's got a great squad in front of him. I hope he gets a head coaching job somewhere in the NFC next year. I don't care where. Get out of Cleveland, let them go back to being Cleveland. Right. That's a good defensive football team. And we caught them on their heels largely because the Steelers forced turnovers. That's a good thing. But their offense didn't produce much in that game. That wasn't a great offensive game. The no huddle is not an end-all, be-all solution to anything. It exploits certain matchups. And this is not a particularly deep offense, but when you have a guy like Le'Veon Bell, a running back who can do, you know, he's multidimensional. He can rush between the tackles. He can get outside. He can catch passes from the slot out of the backfield. He's a weapon. When you have a guy like that, you can break into that no huddle and be effective with it. Le'Veon Bell hadn't played a snap in the NFL before week 4. Even then, it took him a while. You could tell to get his pre-injury legs back. After that, against the Jets, for example, I thought he looked terrible against the Jets, his second career start. Outside of that, you've got an offensive line that can barely keep the same five guys on the field game to game to game. that's a challenge, you know, most other NFL teams don't have. They're five starters. They start every single week. Ours don't. We're down to, like, what, our 12th starting lineman this year? Something like that. They're not healthy enough consistently to think that you can go into something that requires a high level of detail, a high level of coordination, and a high level of anticipation, not just by your quarterback, but by your offensive line as well. You can't keep moving guys into that and expect to have that, you know, almost sixth sense approach to what you're doing. They're not capable of running the no huddle with the personnel that they have until they get an offensive line that stays healthy. And you want to know what's oddly not coincidental? The longest streak of health that they've had this year was that three-game winning streak when they started to use the no huddle. Along with that, the longest streak of health that they had in 2012, the four-game winning streak before Roethlisberger got hurt. And that's when they were running the ball down people's throat in power, something they have, you know, been begging the offensive line to do this season and have failed miserably at it. It's about offensive line continuity. And they have not had that over the last two seasons. The only success, though, that they've had has been two different streaks in two different years in which those guys were healthy. They put the same five guys out there. They're just not able to do that. For whatever reason that is, they can't do it. So until they do, you're going to continue to be looking 8-8 in the face. You know, the first 7-9 team in 10 years is staring down the barrel right now. Until they get guys healthy to go out there week in and week out, I don't see how that's going to change. You can't improve if you don't have the same guys out there playing.
Well, you know how bad it is on offensive line, too, is the fact that we signed Levi Jones. Well, actually acquired him in a trade from Arizona, and he ended up injured his triceps or biceps and warm-ups.
Yeah,
it's on the shelf now.
Levi Brown. I wish it was Levi Jones.
Levi
Jones being the guy that Joey Porter cold cocked in the casino back in the day.
That's
pro football talk, alleging all of that. Yeah, Levi Brown came in, warmed up, and the site blew up that week. That was huge news. We got this, you know, left tackle. He's got all this, you know, speculation around him. Is he any good? He's played terribly, but the best he's played in his career has been under Haley. He has what seems to be kind of a rift with Haley right now, but maybe that'll, you know, inspire him to be better, blah, blah, blah. We're all excited about it. Ball is even kicked off. He's done for the year. He injures the same part of his body that kept him out all of last season. So all of that was for absolutely nothing, and Kelvin Beachum ends up starting over there anyway. Luck. Misfortune.
Right.
You can't really chalk it up any more than that. I don't know how one tears a tricep muscle, let alone does it in warm-ups, but clearly you've got kind of a lemon there, and you didn't have to pay much for it, fortunately, so that's not too bad. But we haven't heard the last of him either. Don't be at all surprised if he signs a 1 or 2 year veteran minimum deal with the Steelers heading into next season. I would not be surprised if he is their team's starting left tackle next year. Mm. That's something I said a couple weeks ago. I think Kelvin Beachum, though, has improved enough to make it an honest thought. I mean, it's not necessarily a position that you want to, you know, go with the cheapest bargain that you can. But at the same time, let's do this. I mean, maybe this is something for your listeners to participate in. Name me the two best tackles in Pittsburgh Steelers history. Who are the best offensive tackles that this franchise has ever had?
That's even stopped me.
I'll bet you're going to tell me it's Max Starks, right?
You know what? It has to be someone better than Max Starks.
Well, you know what? There isn't. That's my point. It's exactly what I mean.
God.
Max Starks isn't the best, but Max Starks is in the top five. This franchise has never had great tackles. Never. There are some good ones. Never great ones, you know? We haven't had Anthony Munoz or Jonathan Ogden, obviously. We haven't had Joe Thomas. We haven't had good tackles. They've been decent pro tackles, but not guys that spent 15 years and went to 9 Pro Bowls. We haven't even guys, I don't think, went more than 2 Pro Bowls in their career. Starks never did. Max Starks is the only player in NFL history to start on his Super Bowl championship team at left tackle and right tackle. The only guy to ever do that. Nobody outside of Pittsburgh knows who Max Starks is. With all due respect to Max Starks, he was a good player. But for a franchise that's been around since 1933, to say he's one of the best in franchise history, you haven't had a lot of good tackles. How many championships have they had? Six. Never had a Hall of Fame left tackle playing for them. Do they need that level of left tackle? You know, Kelvin Beecham makes $10 an hour compared to what Joe Thomas is making. Cleveland doesn't win a whole lot of games because of their dominant Hall of Fame level left tackle. I don't think that you need one. I think you need a solid one. Maybe Beecham can be that. It's not out of the question to think that maybe he's good enough to hold down that spot in a very, you know, Starksian-like way. Maybe he's good enough to keep there and hold his own. Maybe he's somebody that they can count on to be consistent at the position. And who knows? Maybe he can stay healthy for 16 games. Maybe that's more important right now than drafting one, you know, fifth overall, which is not the answer to their, you know, problems at the position at all right now. They need guys that can be healthy and that can hold their own. That's it. Plain and simple. They can do that. That helps the salary cap situation. It helps their overall offensive continuity, and we're seeing it week in and week out right now. So hopefully it's Beecham. If not, it'll be Levi Brown. I'd be willing to bet on that right now.
Now, to your point about offensive tackles, was our starting left tackle this year, but he got benched.
Mike Adams?
I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank now.
Mike Adams?
Mike Adams, yeah.
We don't even remember the ones who were starting in week one anymore, let alone how good they were in the franchise.
Yeah. Is he a bust in your eyes?
You know, here's what you get with Adams, in my opinion, and I'm not inside the young man's head. I can't tell you exactly what's going on there. He had an interesting off-season issue, and this isn't reporting anything, but I've heard different accounts of what exactly happened that night on the south side back in, July? He missed training camp, physically at least. He's a second-year player. Jack Bicknell Jr. becomes the Steelers' offensive coordinator, replacing, I forgot his name already, Sean Kugler last season. He was at Ohio State the season before that. So you're looking at a young kid that had three different offensive line coaches in 3 years going into his second year as a pro, and he's only had one training camp, and that was his training camp as a rookie when he doesn't know a damn thing.
Yeah.
He gets put out to play left tackle in the NFL at 24 years of age, coming off multiple stab wounds that cost him basically the entire offseason program. You look at Mike Adams' move, though. Watch him, and everybody will immediately jump to, he's just not a left tackle. He's a right tackle. He did great at the right side, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Watch him play the right tackle position because that's what he was playing when he was doing well. Watch him in run blocking in particular. The guy is an absolute freak athlete. You don't see players, humans, his size moving the way that he does. He has great feet. He's very fast. He can get from point A to point B, if it's under 3 yards, as fast as probably pretty much anybody in the NFL. He's that explosive. He's that natural of an athlete. But, and here's the kicker, he doesn't have a damn clue about what he's doing. He's completely lost in pass protection. You saw Jared Allen flat out abuse him in the way the senior 3-year captain, state champion wrestler just pounds on the freshman. Jared Allen did not overwhelm Mike Adams. He didn't beat him physically. He beat him mentally, and he beat him bad. It was almost like you could hear Jared Allen taunting him as he was coming after him. Adams had no idea what he was doing. He had no idea what he was in for. The kid was just completely overmatched by a veteran, high-level player. Physically, he has the capability. Mentally, it didn't click. And that's where Beecham has to be. Beecham doesn't have a quarter of Adams' athletic ability. Beecham shouldn't even be a tackle for all intents and purposes. But Beecham is a smart football player. He has good technique, and he's improved considerably from where he was last season when he was also a disaster on the right side. So you really hope Adams is the answer, but you've got to get some continuity with him. He's been hurt a bunch too. He needs to go through training camp. He probably needs to go into camp in competition for that left tackle position, and he needs to study his butt off. If he isn't going to do that, then, yeah, he's going to be a second-round bust. That's not because of the Steelers scouting department, though. That's because of Mike Adams. He has a high level of talent. He can be a very, very good player. He would have been a first-round pick if he didn't get caught with marijuana in the system at the combine. And that's a whole other argument about whether they should have drafted him. But the reality is he was a first-round pick if that didn't happen. They got him in the second round. What happens next year, the light bulb just clicks, and he goes crazy, and all of a sudden he's locking people down on the left side. We all love him, right?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't think that was possible until you saw Jason Worlds racking up quarterback hits like they're going out of style over the last three games. Who saw that coming?
Exactly.
You know,
don't listen
to Jason Worlds. don't let him tell you how great he's been throughout his career, because it's flat out not true. He's had some injury issues, but he didn't produce at all until recently. So
for
where they are, they're younger players. You've got to give them a chance to adapt. You've got to give them a chance to get comfortable. Three different coaches in 3 years, not to mention the jump to the pros, a stabbing incident, and all kinds of other, you know, dramatic stuff happening in and around Mike Adams. If the guy can just kind of, you know, reshift his life to football, figure out what he's going to do, he will get a crack to be the starting left tackle next season. That's a guarantee. He's not going anywhere. He's not going to be cut as much as people like to think that he will. He's not going anywhere. He's going to be a backup until his rookie contract expires. And then we'll see what happens with him.
Now, I've got 9 more minutes to get in 2 questions I was dying to ask you. But I thoroughly enjoyed this rather entertaining podcast about our beloved Steelers. First one is, do you think that we should 86 Todd Haley, in the offseason?
I don't see any reason to do that, no. What exactly is this offense being designed for them to do? They want to run the football, right? They tried desperately to run the football. Not to lean on the same point over and over again, but when you're starting, what is the number? I got to look this up again. I think maybe it's 10 different starting offensive linemen this year. You're on your third center now. Cody Wallace.
Right.
Don't even try to tell me you heard of Cody Wallace before August of this year.
No, I'm not going to pretend I did.
he will be the third Steelers center to snap a ball to Ben Roethlisberger this season.
Jeez,
Cody Wallace is 29 years old. He's making his first NFL start. He's been in the league for 7 seasons, and he's never started a game. I don't know if that makes him a doctor of NFL football or what, but the guy's been in school for however long. He's never had to perform surgery until now. I think some of that might be because he's not any good, you know, with all due respect to him. I hope he goes out there and he lights people up. I really do. I hope that every talent evaluator that's come across this guy in 7 seasons and 3 different teams was completely wrong about him, and he dominates. I'm not going to bet on that. He's probably not a very good player. Another thing the Steelers fans don't really like to hear is Fernando Velasco is probably the culprit behind why they weren't running the ball very well. He was not a very good run blocker at all. He really wasn't. He did not dominate the point of attack. He was not strong. He couldn't move people off the ball. When you're playing in the NFC North, you've got some, you know, massively powerful interior defensive linemen. He couldn't move any of them. Hell, Pouncey put on 15 pounds this offseason trying to combat those guys. And I don't know if you really paid attention to the way Pouncey looked in the preseason, but he was terrible. He was really bad. He can't play at that weight. And maybe it's a different story in his rehab. He comes back next year. Maybe it's a different argument for how he prepares himself to play. But Velasco's lighter than Pouncey, and Velasco got whipped in the running game. He was not an effective player. He's a smart player. He does well with, you know, your combo blocks in your power running game. But he can't move well outside, which is why you heard this entire offseason about outside zone and all they were going to do in the running game. They completely abandoned it when Pouncey went down. Beecham couldn't run it, and Velasco couldn't run it. So he had an off-season strategy to run the ball a certain way, and that was scrapped 8 plays into the season. How is that Todd Haley's fault?
Yeah, that's good.
Ben Roethlisberger fumbling the ball and you know, going all John Wayne in the second half of games, you know, trying to make every play himself, led to a slew of turnovers the first half of the season. He's calmed down. He's playing within the offense. He's doing what the offense needs him to do. At the same time, Haley and Tomlin, don't think Tomlin, you know, gets a pass on any of this.
Oh,
They have reciprocated that to Roethlisberger by giving him more freedom to call what's going on, and their offenses perform fairly well. Not outstanding. They still can't run the ball to save their lives. This is one of the worst rushing seasons the NFL has ever seen, and the Steelers are one of the worst teams. So you're looking at the worst Steelers rushing team in the history of the game. I'm not saying Todd Haley deserves a raise here, but how much of this stuff can you really say is the fault of the coordinator? You know, there are a lot of things that are completely out of
That's
his control.
Point.
And look at where they are compared to where they were. Have they not improved incredibly? And this is a team.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to look back at the records and see. But I'm fairly certain no good offense has ever had Guy Wimper starting for it. I'm fairly certain that's true. If somebody can prove me wrong, then go do it. Guy Wimper started multiple games for this team as a tackle and a guard. He's not a guard. He is an absolutely horrible guard. And he's going to start a left tackle probably, or it's Mike Adams and his, you know, 17 sacks and 4 games allowed. Is it going to be Todd Haley's fault if they lose to Miami? Probably. Everyone wants to blame Todd Haley. It must be his fault. He doesn't even have, you know, comparable NFL-level players playing for him half the time. It's not the fault of the coaches. You've got to keep guys healthy. I don't know how you do that, but it's something that needs to happen. You look at them at their best the last two seasons. When their guys were healthy, tell me those offenses didn't work. Tell me that offense didn't beat the hell out of Cincinnati last year at Paul Brown Stadium in prime time in Week 7. They shredded Washington. They beat the hell out of, well, I guess they didn't really do it against the Chiefs. They lit up the Giants.
Yeah.
Huge performances from those teams when they had the right personnel to run what they were trying to do. The winning streak that they had this season, probably against a little lesser competition, but the Lions game, look at the offensive production in that game. They hit them exactly where they needed to. It was a great game plan. It was well executed. And they came back from, you know, what was really kind of a roller coaster game. I don't see why you get rid of them for any of this stuff. I really don't. You know, I'm not – this isn't a great offense. They've got a ways to go yet. But they're super young. They're inexperienced, and they're still finding their way. Their best days are ahead of them. And I'm perfectly fine with giving Haley next season to see what he can do then.
All right, I got 2 more minutes, and you can give me a 1 or 2 word answer to this if you like. Did Tomlin know what he was? Did he know what he was doing when he was standing on the sidelines doing Jacoby Jones's kickoff return?
No comment. It's 2 words. I would say no.
Okay, good stuff.
Like,
hey,
my
man,
answer would be no.
There you go. I see you on that. Well, thanks a lot, Neil, man. I appreciate that. This has been fun as hell. I enjoyed this. And hopefully we can hook up again, maybe doing the Steelers stretch run to the playoffs. Who knows?
I'm seeing that. First week they'll be at, Indianapolis? Because another dominant AFC team. They're doing real well lately. Hopefully that's the case.
Right.
And if it is, definitely let me know. I'd love to be back.
Cool. Hey, thanks a lot, dude. Take care.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Peace out. That was my man, Neil Coulong, from SB Nation's Behind the Steel Curtain. I enjoyed it. It was fun as hell. Hope you enjoyed it, too. We're going to have another podcast come Monday. I'll be talking to Seth Rosenthal from from SB Nation's Toastin' and Tastin'. That's the New York Knicks blog. So stay tuned for that come Monday at 9 p.m. For now, this is Scott Burks with the Clown Hour. Take care. Peace out. Oh, shit!